Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you, and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from, what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to From the Kitchen Table. I'm Sean Duffy, along with my co-host for the podcast, my partner in life, and my wife, Rachel Campos Duffy.
It's great to be back, Sean. It's Holy Week. We just had Palm Sunday a couple days ago, and we're approaching the three holiest days, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, then the eve of Easter, and moving into Easter and the resurrection of our Lord. And these are the holiest days of the year. I mean, Christmas is fun. It's my favorite part time of year for a lot of reasons. We all get together and there's gifts and there's joyfulness. But this is really the heart of what our religion is about. And we started talking about our children and how much they know. We were sharing some stories about what our children know about this week and talking to them every night of prayer night this past week. We started thinking, how do you keep your kids active, faithful Christians, even beyond when they leave your own house? And we have older kids.
Yeah. So it's a struggle to make sure you raise kids that carry on the faith. And so we have our advice on what we've done to keep our kids Catholic. And by the way, our three older ones who are out of the house are faithful Catholics. They go to church on Sunday.
No one's forcing them.
They practice the faith. We're not there telling them they have to go. Which is interesting. And so after we kind of give our advice of what we think we do to make sure we're raising good Catholic or Christian kids, we asked our older kids, what did they think we did well to make them faithful Catholics?
Which is one of the beauty of having older kids. By the way, we call this our exit interviews. We do this whenever a child of ours is about to graduate or just graduated from high school, is moving on to college. We sit them down and do exit interviews because when you have a lot of kids, you actually have a lot of chances to improve your game, what we call do-overs, right?
Right.
And so we'll sit our kids down and say, hey, what did we do right? What did we, what could we improve on? And we've had amazing answers from them. And it's actually really helped us do a better job because the older ones are kind of guinea pigs, right? In the end, I mean, we don't know what we're doing. We're kind of feeling it out and trying our best. But then when you get that feedback, it's really interesting. And so what could be more important to me? We always say, Sean, that our job isn't to get our kids into Harvard. It's to get them into heaven. So this is the most important work that we're doing.
Yeah. And I think what's nice on the exit interview is, again, they take it seriously. They actually give us the best answers that they can. And sometimes we don't like their answers.
It's hard to hear sometimes.
Yeah. But normally they're pretty insightful. And most of the time we can agree with the advice they give as they exit the house.
And there was some overlap, by the way, Sean, when they said what we said.
On this one, there is. And sometimes there's consistent themes that the older kids have on what went well or didn't go well in the house. So
sometimes I wonder, were they colluding? Did they talk amongst each other? This is what you guys are doing wrong.
We have to. But also to your exit interview point, this is another exit interview that we've done with all of them in preparation for this podcast.
It's a spiritual exit interview.
So the exit interview can continue for years, if not maybe decades. They're going to keep getting exit interviews. I want to make the pitch again. What's beautiful is when you have a big family, you can do an exit interview with old ones and improve your game with the little ones you still have in your house. And you can only do that if you have a lot of kids that stretch, say, like 20 years like us.
Yeah. So,
Yeah, anyway. We've had 9 kids over 20 years. We have 3 kids out of the house. For those who don't know, they're 24 to 20. Those 3, so 24.
They're 4 to 24.
The 3 that are out of the house are 20, 22, and 24,
yeah.
Correct?
Okay, yes.
And so, as we said, all of them go to church on their own. We know that just because, you know, they don't have to tell us that they do, but we know they do. And we have active, you know, conversations and text messages, family text conversations about the faith. So we know that they're very active. So some of the stuff overlaps. So the first thing is the basics, right? Get the basics right. Go to church on Sunday. In our case, we're Catholic, go to Mass. And you want to do that consistently, no matter where you're at. And I was thinking about this, even when we travel, we make a point of going, okay, we're in this new city. What time is Mass? And it's like automatic. Like the kids aren't even surprised that we're going to Mass in some strange city because we go to Mass wherever we're at. That's what makes the church universal, right? You can get the Mass in Cleveland and New York. It's the same Mass.
And we don't even get any pushback on vacation.
No.
That we're going to go. They're like, they know we're going to do it. Now, there's been a couple times in our travels, listen, have we missed a Sunday Mass? Yeah, we missed a Sunday Mass when things have gotten crazy. Yeah, this, like everybody, life kind of consumes you.
Kids are sick, something happens.
Or we're all sick.
Yeah.
But what happens also for us, if we don't make it to church, what we'll always do is we have some of our favorite priests that put their Masses online, and so we'll watch it as a family.
Yeah,
so
it's not like a throwaway day. We still pray the rosary, and we do that so that our kids know. But again, they know it's an extreme circumstance when that happens, and it's very rare.
So it's very simple. If you want your kids to be practicing Christians or Catholics, set them up for success and go to church with them. So if you don't go to church with them when they get older, they're probably not going to go to church.
So you mean when they're younger?
So go to church when they're younger. So they'll go to church when they're older.
Yeah.
But if you don't go to church when they're younger, they're probably not going to go to church when
it's
they're
pretty
older.
Simple stuff.
Simple stuff. That's
Can
right.
I tell you a story really quick of when I was in my mid-20s, I traveled with a friend of mine for 3 months to India. I stayed in a state, a Catholic state called Kerala, which is in the southwest of India. And I lived with her family. They were Catholic. Obviously, everybody in that in Kerala. Everyone's named Tommy, Sean,
right?
Because St. Thomas evangelized this state. It's officially considered a Catholic state. And so I went there, and I in addition to living there and traveling, I volunteered with my friend at Mother Teresa had an old age home there. And there was also an orphanage there that I volunteered at. And it was a really interesting experience because, you know, when you go to India, I've lived all over the world. I'm a military brat. This was the most exotic place I've ever been. It felt like I had landed in a different on a different planet. It was so extraordinary. And yet I landed in a place that was Catholic. And so when I went to Mass, this family was very faithful, very Catholic. I would go to Mass several times a week. When people would go to this church, it was in Malayalam, which is a language that they speak there. They didn't speak English in the Mass. There were no pews, so everyone sat on the floor, and it was divided by gender. So the women sat on the left, the men sat on the right on the floor, and everyone removed their shoes. So when you go to the church, there are piles, hundreds of shoes outside because you take your shoes off to enter into the church. So there were obviously some differences, different language, different customs. And yet I could follow the Mass. And it was a moment, I was 24, 25 years old, where I suddenly very tangibly understood, one, the universality of the church, that wherever you were, literally on the other side of the planet. And it gave me so much comfort to know, even though I was homesick, that I was at church and my parents and my siblings were that same day hearing the same exact Mass, the same exact readings. The Mass, the liturgy of the Eucharist was exactly the same. It was a really deepening of my faith, being away from them and going to Mass on my own and knowing that I was connected to them through the Mass. Fascinating thing. And I hope I've thought about that with our kids away. We have one daughter in Rome right now. One is in Florida. The other one is in Los Angeles. And I wonder, do they think of us as well when they're at Mass away from us and that connection that we have? That
in the exit interview, they didn't say they thought of us at Mass.
I think they do. I think it's very unifying and transcendent to have that joint experience.
It reminds them of their family because we do this as a family. But also, so other advice. So we pray together, right? So at night, there's a few nights we'll miss, but virtually every night we will pray together as a family. And so in that prayer time, we might do an Our Father and a Hail Mary, and then we'll think about people we want to pray for as we do the prayer. But other times we'll do the rosary, or sometimes if it's late at night, we may just do a decade of the rosary. So we'll do a portion of the rosary. And there's some deviation. And even what's interesting, Rachel, is even because we've at least done a decade of the rosary so often, little Valentina will go get the rosaries.
She's the best at passing out the rosaries. So she knows what we're going to do. There's a place by our family altar where we hang the rosaries, and she passes them out to everybody. And then she sits down with hers on the couch, and she's into it, and she gets it.
She might try to hit her sister in the meantime.
Sometimes she hits us with rosaries.
Yes,
that's true.
She'll whip us with rosaries.
We have to tell her stop.
Stop it. But there's no complaint from the kids, actually, when we do that. No, but if it's late at night and we're going to do a full rosary, they might get some complaining. Mm. But again, it's part of our family tradition. Mm. And our faith is part of our family, and it's expected that we're going to do this.
And the prayers at night also vary for those who are Catholic or aren't Catholic. We have a liturgical season, so our year is divided into four different seasons. Our altar is decorated differently depending on whether it's the Christmas season or the Advent season, the Christmas season, Easter season, the ordinary time. So it kind of varies, but some of the prayers like in Advent, for the 4 weeks leading up to Advent, we turn down the lights and we do our prayer time by candlelight. And then we always pray, we always sing a certain song that is reminiscent of Advent, which is O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. So there are certain things that happen the same way. During Lent, we try and also do the Stations of the Cross. And through the years, when those older kids were younger, where they actually drew their own Stations of the Cross. There's 14 Stations of the Cross. And the best ones I preserved, I laminated. We bring back those drawings, and it's just kind of fun because some of them are crazy. And
they're
pretty funny drawings.
It's a pretty serious,
serious. But it's fun to go back and see what they thought Jesus looked like when they were six, how they drew Mary, weeping at the cross when they were seven. And so we bring those back, and they're a wonderful memory, but it also gets them back into, again, I think what kids like, Sean, they like routine, they like tradition. It makes them feel safe, and there's no better place to build these traditions around than your religion.
But again, this is also what we think. It's our job to catechize our kids. And again,
that's also a really important point, Sean.
Our school participates in that. We send them to a Catholic school, but that's our job as well. This is part of the conversations that we have with them during our prayer time or with the Stations of the Cross. It's part of that process of
explaining the faith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Explain. And again, think about what families take time to do, sports and clubs and all this stuff. This is a priority. And if you make this a priority, and by the way, if you haven't started this with your family, it's never too late.
It's never too late.
Start tomorrow. Start this Holy Week. But when you carve that time out. So for us, we've had to, since Sean got this job with Fox Business, we've had to move it later than we would like. Mm-hmm. But we still do it. We wait for Sean to come home. And then we do our prayer time. And that carved out time, that prioritization that we make, sends a message. It's through osmosis. It's you don't even have to say it anymore. The fact that when Sean comes home, we've prioritized prayer time sends a message to the kids that this is something that we as a family value.
And I think that's really important. So if you outsource your values to somebody else, your kids will have the values of somebody else.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that we take again, how do we treat each other as a family? What's important to our family? How do we spend our time together as a family?
And some people will send their kids to Catholic school and say, well, the Catholic school's got it.
Yeah, but you have to back it up in your home, right? And it's nice to have both, a Catholic school or a Christian school, and it's then backed up and reinforced in your home. That's the best scenario, which is what we've tried to replicate with all the kids, and we've been very successful at that because we've been blessed with very good, you know, Catholic schools, some better than others in the places that we've lived. But again, whether it's politics, what's happening in the world, faith, all of those, by the way, all those things actually can come up during prayer time. It's interesting.
Sometimes they do.
Again, sometimes it's at the dinner table and sometimes it's at prayer time. But that time that you spend together, it's interesting what your kids are thinking about and what they want to pray about, who they care about that might be in need, what's on their mind. You get to know them a lot better because they'll say some things that are like, huh? I didn't know. Okay, well, we'll pray for
that, right? For that. We'll go around and say, what are you praying for today? Who do you want to lift up in prayer? What are you grateful for? And those conversations, you're right. Sometimes you didn't realize they were thinking about something and it comes up in that context. And this idea that we're surrendering whatever our needs are, whatever our thoughts are, up to God in this moment. So like these problems that we have, these problems in the world, we can't really solve them. We have to lift them up. Somebody else is going to deal with it. And I think that's also very reassuring. You see all these kids today, Sean, that have a lot of stress about climate change, you know, and they feel like the world's going to end and they don't want to have kids. And there's a lot of mental health anxiety that has been given to a lot of kids about climate change. And a lot of the problems in our world, whatever they are, I think it's reassuring for kids to know that's not their problem to solve necessarily, right? But in the end, turn it over to God.
You wrote something interesting. It's that I think there's a lot of people who haven't thought about this and their kids might be older. And I think it's never too late. That was a really important point because even if your kids are out of your home and you start going to church on Sunday, or when they do come home and you're like, you know what, I'm not going to beat them over the head, but we're going to pray together. Again, as parents, your kids look up to you, right? They obviously love you. You love them. You've raised them. And if they're 22 years old and they see their mom and dad going to church, they might be like, huh, mom and dad are going to church. And actually we're praying together.
What's that about?
What's that about? And they might just go, maybe I'm going to check it out as well. And you can give them a little incentive, a little push to go. And I think that can be life changing for even your older kids to lead by example, how you live your life.
So true.
And they might go, huh, I'm going to try that same thing that mom and dad are doing.
And if they're not into that routine, and if you're not in that routine, what you can do is also build incentives around it. So I don't think it's a bad idea to say, hey, guys, why don't we go to church today, this Sunday? We'll all go out to brunch later. And now you created this tradition of we go to mass, we go to brunch, or we go to mass and then we go to grandma's house for coffee and donuts or whatever. Whatever that is, building things around it that are social and family oriented, because it is a day of rest. Sunday is a day of rest.
We might go to mass, just go, we're gonna get donuts when I come home.
Yeah.
And they're like,
and every
mass,
day they go to
we're going to mass and we're
and
getting donuts.
Associating donuts with mass and that's what gets them going at first.
So be it.
So be it. And the other thing about prayer before we move on from this point, because I think it's one of the most important points, is also prayer at mealtime. Whether you're in the house or you're eating out, that example of praying before your meal
giving thanks
for that.
Being grateful. I was telling this, I always say the simplest things. It's like that we have a roof over our head that doesn't rain on us, that we have heat in our home, that we have food here. I mean, there's a lot of people who may not have that, or there's generations before us who didn't have it. And we should be blessed and give thanks for those very simple things that we have in our lives. And our health, by the way, if you're not healthy,
it's hard.
It's really hard.
It's hard.
Okay.
All right. Know your faith because your kids will ask you questions. So you had Patrick asking you questions this week.
Yeah, but why did Jesus suffer? Why didn't he say, I don't want to suffer? Why did God make him suffer? right? And then we had to talk about, well, actually, he didn't want to suffer. And he actually asked God to take the cup away from him. Mm-hmm. But he said, your will be done. So he said, if you want me to do it, I'll do it. But if you ask me, I prefer not to have to go through this horrible death. And we had a conversation about mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of went off into different directions. But he's seven. And it's a really, they're really good questions and thoughtful questions about, well, why would he do this?
We'll be back with much more after this.
Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from, what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
I think that as parents, and for me, this was, I had a book once that what talked about the spiritual capacity of potential of children. And, you know, adults often underestimate the potential of children to enter into a spiritual life and to understand these spiritual concepts. And actually, not only do they underestimate the spiritual potential of children, but they actually don't realize that in some ways, children, by their nature and their innocence, are actually able to enter into this more easily than us. Mm. And that if we sit back, if we give them the information, and then we listen, we can actually learn spiritual lessons from our own children. I had this experience once, ironically, during Holy Week. Our daughter Margarita was probably only maybe 4 years old. She's very little. And maybe less. She could have been three or four. I can't remember. Extremely young. And it was one of these, you know, I had seven. At that point, I probably had seven, eight kids under. Yeah, maybe I probably had eight little kids, all living under the house at that point. You could imagine how busy.
That sounds like so many.
I know. Right now, we just have six in the house. At the time, it was eight, I believe. And maybe seven. I can't remember. But in any case, it's busy. When you have Holy Week, and for us, we go, you know, to Holy Thursday Mass, and we have to go to the service on Friday, and then we either go on Saturday or Sunday, the eve of Holy Saturday, or we go on Easter Sunday. But and we have special meals on Thursday, and we have activities that we do on Friday, religious activities. So it's a very busy time. And as a mom, I was getting really caught up in the to-do list. This is my own cross that I carry, my to-do list. And I, you know, trying to get through stuff instead of letting things just unfold. And of course I have that burden as a mom. If I don't do it, it's not going to get done. So I'm sure I was thinking about the meal and we had to get to Mass and I thought we were running late and we're all this stuff. And, you know, she came up to me, Marguerite, and she said, I need a purse. I'm like, why do we need a purse right now? I'm trying to get your shoes on. We're trying to get out the door. We're running late. I need a purse. And so just to shut her up, I said, go get her a purse, somebody. I sent somebody else to go get her a purse. And then she was like, I need Band-Aids. You know, kids love Band-Aids. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. And I had no idea what she was doing. And then I see her with the purse, I see her with the Band-Aids, and I was so exasperated. I'm like, we're going to Mass. Why do you need a purse and Band-Aid? We're really running late. And she said, what I hadn't realized is that our older daughter had been reading to her while all of this getting ready was happening to occupy her, and had read to her from a Catholic book that had beautiful pictures. And so she had seen really and absorbed for the first time the passion of Christ, right? The Jesus getting whipped at the and the crown of thorns and being crucified. And she had seen these very beautiful, but very graphic, very Catholic photos of Jesus bleeding after having been, you know, whipped and put on the crown of thorns. And in my rush, I had not known that, but in my rush, like, why are you doing this? Why do you need this purse? Why do you need the Band-Aids? She said, because we're going to church and I want to give the Band-Aids to Jesus and his owies. And I finally was able to piece all this together. Imagine this little girl, 3-4 years old, absorbing this so deeply that she wanted to do something to make Jesus's pain go away. Wow. Made me feel about this little. I certainly hadn't entered into that mystery on that level, but this little girl had. And then in that moment, the 3-4 year old, I think she was maybe 3.5, 4, taught me how to absorb and take in Holy Week better. Those are the kind of moments that we live for as parents.
So thank goodness in those busy moments where you
just want to get things done.
To actually be able to take a moment and actually realize what she was saying. Kind of, you talked a little bit about tradition as well as we try to raise good kids. So in my house when I grew up, we did Easter baskets. So we would dye eggs. And lo and behold, there would be, you know, chocolate eggs and jelly beans in our hidden basket. We got a little older. There would be a communal, you know, wood bowl with the fake grass in it and eggs and, you know,
candy.
All the candy in there. And then we'd all kind of share as a family when we woke up when we didn't want to look for Easter baskets. But Rachel kind of changed that tradition in our new household together. And so instead of an Easter basket, Rachel, to try to keep a meaning of this season alive and well, you now do, this goes back to when Navita was little. We've done this
years
of having kids, which is, I think, really cool.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what I did. And thank you for that reminder, because I actually think I posted it last year on Instagram and people loved it. And I'm going to repost it actually today so that people, there's still time to do it. So what you do is on Holy Thursday, you sit with your kids and you have them draw what they think Jesus looks like on the cross. Okay. And again, fascinating experience to see what they look. I save all of these, by the way. And then they cut it out. They cut out their picture of Jesus, whether it's Jesus on the cross, Jesus risen, however they want to, they see Jesus. And then I get a wooden box. And
this is like a craft store.
Yeah,
like
you go Amazon, to Michael's Walmart. You get a little wooden box. You could even use a shoebox. You could use a cardboard shoebox. It doesn't matter. A box. And then we've talked about what happens over these 3 days. So now we're going to put Jesus in the box on Good Friday. And then we're going to cover Jesus with a cloth, just as he was covered before he was put into the tomb. And then we put the lid over the box. And then I send them outside. Find your favorite rock. Because remember, the tomb was covered with a rock. And then
they put a rock on top of the box.
That's right.
On top of the tomb.
On top of the tomb.
Right. So we're recreating what we're actually celebrating.
Jesus coming down from the cross, being put into a tomb, covered in the cloth. Lid over, rock on top, just like the rock that covered Jesus's tomb. And then on Easter Sunday, when they wake up,
lo and behold, the rock is not on top of the tomb. The rock is
on the side.
On the side. And when they open up their tomb, their little Jesus that they made is gone.
It's gone, right? Just like Jesus resurrected.
However, there is candy and chocolate and eggs inside their tomb, right? So I think it's getting rid of the
Easter Bunny. People are attached to the Easter Bunny. I always found it problematic.
We're doing the same thing that I did when I was little. It's just there's far more meaning behind it, right? And so again, little things like that I think are really important and impactful for especially the little ones in the house. But by the way, the older ones,
they love it.
When they're home for Easter, make no mistake,
they want their box.
They have a box and they draw Jesus.
I have seen 20-year-olds cut out their Jesus, put it in the box, wrap it in tissue paper.
They love it.
And put their rock on top of the box so they like it. And by the way, Sean, I remember one Easter we went to Florida on vacation, and in our hotel room, they did the same thing. So they had the same experience. I showed this idea to Pete Hegseth and last year, and he said, the Easter Bunny is fired. You're fired, Easter Bunny. This is now his family's tradition. So you can introduce this at any time. I'm going to put it on my Instagram so you can do that. So then we asked our kids, okay, so I texted on a group chat our older kids, what were the things that we did? They all said Catholic school.
Which, first of all, by the way, she did. She texted all three of the older ones to get this feedback. But I wasn't included on the text.
Sorry.
So she got the feedback and she shared it with me.
I did share it. I should have included you.
You should have included me.
I should have included you. But I got the feedback from them. So here's some of the things that they said that made a big difference for them and why they are still actively Catholic, Christian, and faithful. They said Catholic school was impactful. They were a lot more picky about the school. So our kids have gone to three different Catholic schools. One of them was a rural, very traditional Catholic school in St. Adelbert school in Rochelle.
So first
Wisconsin.
They went to Our Lady of the Lake up in Ashland.
Yeah, they did. I'm sorry.
Then,
so it's
then,
four
then,
schools.
Then to Rochelle.
And the one in Rochelle was a traditional classical school. And it was hard to get there, 45 minutes away. I found another Catholic family that could share with the ride because I knew it was going to be on my own. Sean was in Congress at the time. They told me that those years that they spent at that school was deeply formative for them. So for those Catholic priests out there who wonder if a little tiny rural school in the farmland of, this is a tiny town, Sean, how small do you think this town is?
Like, listen, there was like, Rochelle?
God bless that priest that did that.
There's 1,200 people in Rochelle, 1,500 people. Rochelle's small. I mean, I think it's 2,000 people. Like, it's a small little farm
community.
Tiny town. And, but there's more population around, Rochelle. But they had this amazing little school that we knew it was a great school. And families partnered together to go down and make the effort to get our kids in this amazing school. And by the way, we had a fantastic priest there who drove this school. And again, sometimes like, do I have an impact? Am I making an impact in the world as a priest? And I would just go, yes, you have, because these kids are wonderful practicing Catholics and they'll attribute it back to the little school that you helped create.
They remember that.
And
the families. And the families that it attracted were amazing Catholic families. So that was one. Eventually, we had to go to a different school because we moved and it was too hard to have some kids in this. This was only went to, I think, eighth grade. And when the other ones went to high school, and they had a lot of comments about how they didn't like the wishy-washy Catholic white Catholic high school that they ended up going to. And they didn't love it. But then, fast forward, we moved to New Jersey and we were able to find an amazing, amazing classical Catholic school. And again, they're getting
it. It is the best thing about New Jersey is this Catholic school.
This Catholic school is the best thing that ever happened to our family. And
it's not the taxes. It's not the crappy roads.
No, there's a lot of bad stuff about New Jersey. They have great pizza and we found a great school.
Yes.
They have great pizza in New Jersey. I'm just saying. And so at this school, Sean, what I love is, you talked about we're the first teachers for our children. We're the main instructors, but to have a school that 100% fully partners with you in the religious upbringing of your child is imperative. I don't have to waste my nights on Thursday fighting gender theory. I don't have to do any of that. I can just send them there and know that they care about and love Jesus the same way our family does.
We don't have to rewire them. We don't have to re-educate them when they come home from school. Actually, it's
deprogram them.
Yeah, and we're on the same page. Like what we teach in our home is what they learn in school, and it makes it so much easier to raise kids. Again, like when you're not fighting queer gender theory in school in fourth grade. Right. Or talking about, what am I? In my question, I'm like,
what's your gender? And remember there was in Massachusetts, they had all the children close their eyes, little elementary kids say, what gender do you think you are? I mean, this is the kind of crazy stuff that's happening. So Catholic school was
a big deal for them.
And there are lots of statistics on kids who go to Catholic schools
are more likely to remain Catholic
and active and going to Mass.
Yes.
So that there's an absolute connection. One thing I will say, and we'll save this for a different podcast, but I just want to note on it.
We keep saying Catholic because we're Catholic, but this
applies
to
Christians.
Yeah, I mean, this applies to everything across the spectrum, but we're, again, bear with us because we are Catholic and we're using our Catholic background.
Yeah, all of this applies to whether you're Protestants. I would have this discussion with Pete Hegseth. Two things. Pete would say, pick the school, then your house. That was really great advice. The best advice. We haven't taken that advice, and we have a lot of regret.
He gave us the advice after we bought our house and picked a school.
Yeah.
Right? Then he's like, oh, no, you're supposed to pick the school first and then buy your house.
Pick the school, then the house. That is important.
So we're like 40 minutes
from the
school.
The other thing is, really, this came out in the discussion that I had with my kids in their text. Not every Christian or Catholic school is the same. So, in fact, this Catholic light school that they went to, they all said they found, they said it was soul crushing. That was their quote. It was soul crushing. They really want the truth. They don't want watered down faith, and they want teachers and faculty who are on fire for the Lord, who are passing on the traditions of the church, who are giving. So right now you can go to very expensive private Catholic schools that don't even do weekly Mass. I've seen those schools. Their school that they go to have Mass every week, benediction and adoration every week, confession every week. You know, these are the kinds of things you want to look for if you want to really infuse your children with their faith so that it's just part of who they are. It's not something they just do on Sunday. It's totally infused into their culture at home and at school.
And by the way, the education around that is classical, and the education outside of the faith component is remarkable. And we've made this pitch a lot of times about if you can get your kids out of public school, do it. Ask, if you can't do it yourself, ask whoever you can to help you out, to save your kids. And to your point, every school is not the same. Right.
Yeah. Do your work.
Private
do your
school.
Homework.
Yeah, and pick the best one. But even the not so great Catholic schools that our kids went to,
great point.
The kids have said it was better than going to public school. They would have preferred the soul crushing Catholic school as opposed to going to public school. And so I think that's always important. If it's you can't always get perfection because you don't live near perfection. But you got to take the best of what your community offers you and the schools that are available to you.
And I would say, again, back to the original school that we had talked about, it was worth that drive. And you know what? I always wondered, you know what? I wondered if it was worth it. It was really hard on us to do that drive. I had little kids. Sean was gone all the time. And we had to do this drive. And oh my gosh, like it was so heartening to hear in their text chain how much that school impacted them. And I thought, oh, all those long commute was worth it. And so, you know, you might not know in the moment when you're doing that commute, but how wonderful to hear it this many years later.
So the other family we worked with, there was the Brownells, but
they were
it was a family that actually took the lead. They bought a big old long van.
They wanted
all the kids
to
fit into, and that was a ministry of themselves that were making sure that those Catholic families that wanted to go to this wonderful school, they help organize and orchestrate this movement from up in Walsall where we were down to St. Adalbert's. And so
what a great lesson that is for people too.
Yes.
Like you may have the ability or the knowledge that this is the best place. And you may have a family like ours who was sort of on the cusp, like, should we really do this? We're taking on a lot. And they made that possible for us by buying that van and agreeing to do this carpool.
We all helped pay,
yeah,
pay
we
for
all,
gas.
We all paid for the gas.
They were wonderful.
They were amazing, and they helped us make that move. And now our family is bearing the fruit from all of their work. All of us have ways that we can help other parents make these kind of choices. I love that point.
Okay, so what else did they say?
So they said,
I would tell you all, but I wasn't on the text chain. So Rachel has to
I wrote
some
of them. They were so good. Okay, they said, thank you for exposing us to the beauty of religious art and music. I'm going to be a little biased here for those who aren't Catholic listening. Catholic art and music, no, we're pretty good at that. We're just pretty good at that. Catholic art, Catholic architecture, all of them say that they now when they move to a new city, and each of them have moved to different places or traveled to different places, they seek out the most beautiful traditional church they can have access to and find. Oh, did that make my heart just jump for joy? They see, because one of the things, Sean, when little kids are little, and I think some people sometimes criticize Catholics for their emphasis on the churches. And I've heard people say, oh, if they spent their money on charity instead of these beautiful churches, the whole purpose of the church is to get us connected to God. And the way churches are built, the art, not only do they bring us lifting up, that's why we have these high ceilings, and that's why we have incense that rises and all these, but the artwork, when your children are very little, and I found this as a mom so heartening, I love the bells and the smells and the sights in a Catholic church, because it encompasses all of their senses. So you have a little child that maybe is too young to understand everything that's going on in the liturgy. But I see them staring at stained glass windows, yeah, and looking at statues of the saints and looking up and taking in all of these and asking me questions about what they hear. Or they hear the bell that rings at the moment of consecration and they go, what's happening? Why is that bell? And we can say, that's the moment Jesus is here. Jesus is in the Eucharist right now. So I think that Catholic art, Catholic architecture is so beautiful, and we are attracted to truth and beauty.
If you're a Protestant listening,
don't be offended.
No, I'm sorry. You're gonna have to eat that Catholics have way better art. So we go back way further than you do.
No, it's your history too, by the way. Hold on a second.
I think you're gonna get major objection to say you have better music. They're going to argue with you, so you guys.
I love praise and worship, but when I say music, I don't mean the 70s music of the Novus Ordo, like the modern Catholic Church. I say Gregorian chant, because that is the music of the church. Gregorian chant, Latin music, that is the.
Well, the Pete Hegseth, I Love Jesus music may actually.
I tease Pete all the time. I say, we have Gregorian chant, you have Jesus is my boyfriend music. That said, I love gospel music. We have, as you know, Sean, we have Fox and Faith Sunday,
yes,
during Lent. We have the best Christian music in the country, in the world, come to our set, and it puts my heart on fire. I love it. So I am not dissing it at all.
No, it's why there's one. But as a viewer,
I want to make sure you guys know that I love it.
I get to watch it from home, and it is fantastic. Let's talk about
the most talented musicians in the country, and Christian music come to our studio. It's a blessing.
We'll have more of this conversation after this.
Let's talk about this. So I found this fascinating. So you told me this before, that the kids talked about going to a very traditional Latin mass.
They love it.
In our community, which we were blessed with in Walsall to have that offering for the kids. And again, this is the real, you talk about smells and bells and Latin mass. It was amazing that we had this church in our community.
It was St. Mary's in Walsall that they were introduced to it.
They actually said that was important for them. It was actually surprising to me.
Yeah, they said it was pivotal for their formation. Again, that's Canon Huberfeld who ran that church. And actually Cardinal Burke, who authorized for that church to be built in Wausau when he was the bishop of La Crosse. That was really important, which brings me to another point. They said they love that we had the exposure to, we have deep friendships with priests and nuns. And they said that was very meaningful for them, that they felt like it gave them an insight into vocations and into the church. It didn't feel like the priest was this person that they didn't know and didn't understand, that these priests would come to our house for dinner, that we would go out to dinner with Cardinal Burke, for example, or, you know, different priests that were like Father Frank in Ashland was wonderful. A wonderful priest who was like a very close family friend of ours. And they all had beautiful things to say about the conversations they had with him, and the level of friendship he had with our family was meaningful.
Very incredibly meaningful. But I think they see in all points of our life, we've the priest was not someone who is far off and stand away and the only, you know, see at the altar. Having a personal relationship with the priest or your pastor, I think, demystifies in a good way what happens, you know, during the Mass.
Yeah.
And again, I think it helps bring them closer to the faith as well. And that surprised me too. They said that we had
that really
those friendships were important for
Lucia
them.
Lucia said
well.
That she can remember that we would be talking after church with people, and that she asked Father Frank if she could see all the vestments. That these are what the priest wears, and you know they have different colors and for different feast days and so forth. And she saw a pink one, which of course they wear on Gaudete Sunday, which is the Sunday right before Christmas. And anyway, she said, "Father, would you wear this on my birthday? Would you wear your pink one?" And she remembered having that conversation with him.
I don't think he wore the pink one on her birthday, did he?
I think he. Knowing Father Frank, he just might have. He was so awesome. All right. So the other thing they said was that we never shied away from deep conversations. That when whether it was at dinner or, you know, at prayer time or whenever, that when deep theological, spiritual conversations, even the ones that delved into politics as it related to our spiritual life, they said they always appreciated that we didn't dumb things down for them or childproof it. They really enjoyed that we did that. And that was great to hear. And then the last one, Sean, that I heard that was really powerful. And this one, boy, our Protestant brothers and sisters are going to be able to relate to this one because they're really good at this too, which is that we did not shy away from talking very explicitly about the devil and
yes.
evil. And they said,
demons.
Knowing that demons were real, that spirituality and the light and the dark, the devil was real, that evil truly existed, raised the stakes for them. And that was actually, you know, we live in a world that tries mm-hmm. to say everything is neutral. There's no devil. It's just, you know, be good. You know, like, no. There's evil and there's good. I thought that was fascinating.
We could have scared the hell out of them, right? They could have been like, wah!
I remember, Sean.
But it's an honest and truthful conversation about
yes.
what our faith teaches us about good and evil and demons. And we would share that with them. And again, that can be a motivating factor to
be good.
To be good, yeah.
Sorry, it works. I remember watching The Exorcist when I still don't know why. You know, there's a lot of movies that when we were growing up that were like, why did our parents let us watch that?
Yeah.
I was probably like
parenting
13.
Yeah.
And we watched The Exorcist. And I remember it scared the hell out of me. And at the end of the movie, I was so scared. And I was so scared that I would have to go to bed. You know, and be in the dark after. And I looked over at my mom and I said, "Mom, this movie isn't real, right? I mean, it's just a movie, right?" And my mom said, definitely happens. You can get possessed. You mess with Ouija boards. You do this." And I'm telling you, it scared the heck out of me. But why would we want to lie to our children about that?
But you never probably used a Ouija board.
Never.
Which is smart.
Don't lie to your kids about this because they actually appreciate the truth.
But I think that's interesting. This is our story, right? This is what we've done with our kids and the feedback that we've gotten from them. I think there's a lot of consistent themes that I think work with kids in the conversation we had today. But you got to look at your own kids and your own life and what fits
yes.
in and what works.
Your own denomination, your own traditions.
But making it a priority. Finding room in your life and your day for this part of your kids and how you instruct them, how you raise them is incredibly important. And again, there's a lot of time for soccer, a lot of time for baseball, a lot of time to watch sports on TV. There's a lot of time for yard work. A lot of things there's time for, right? And if you can't say, "I'm going to carve out this little bit of time in our life, in our family for this, which is your faith and your prayer," and what message does that send your kids about how important this is? And so again, you will drive that in your own family. And it doesn't take the most amount of time every day. It can be 5 or 10 minutes that you spend together. And by the way, again, we're going to say families that pray together, stay together. Pray together.
True.
Right? Actually, pray together and stick
marriages where the husband and wife pray together are like 95% less likely to end in divorce. So, right. I mean, it's amazing. I want to say one last thing. I think that if you are married and the husband and wife, I think it's really important for the husband to take a lead in the prayer time. As much as possible, because if not, I think you run the risk of feminizing religion.
That's a really good point. So I think I was gone a lot. And there was a time where you had taken far more of the lead on the religious portion of our family. And we had a conversation about it. It's like, this is going to feminize religion for the kids, and I have to step up. And again, I would always participate, but because I was in and out, she was able to carry the religious ball, you know, in our home consistently, because whether I was there or not, Rachel would lead it. And I've tried more recently to be like, you know what, I am going to lead this.
So you're the leader of this family.
Well, listen, when the kids go to school in the morning, before they leave, they know we're going to pray together. So there's a little prayer we have on our wall right by the door. I lead that every morning. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, well, we do the rosary. We let Paloma usually does it.
Or she likes being a leader.
And she's great
she's
at it.
She's a natural leader.
But if we're not doing the rosary, I'll take the lead on those things. And again, I do think that's really important, especially for boys, to make sure that religion isn't feminized. And it can be a balance. You can both parents can do it. But if only the wife does it, that sends the completely wrong message to the boys in the household. So men have to step up and be part of this. And women should be part of it as well.
Of course.
Togetherness. Well, listen, great conversation on this Holy Week. I think it's appropriate, especially after we had the Sydney Sweeney conversation last week. This is
we're repenting.
We're repenting this week.
We talked about Sydney Sweeney last week, and so this week we're cleaning up our act.
We're cleaning up the act. We're coming back to center. But listen, that was a truthful conversation, and I'm sorry. I'm going to stick by the Sydney Sweeney conversation. I'm sticking by this podcast today. I want to thank you all for joining us at the kitchen table. If you like our podcast, you can rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can always find us on foxnewspodcast.com or foxpodcast.com, one of those. Am I getting it wrong?
What is it? Just go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts have From the Kitchen Table. But it's really important that you subscribe. If you can, please subscribe. And
why is that so important?
Well, it's important for our numbers so that, you know, Fox continues to support our podcast. But it's also important for you because you will get a reminder every week whenever a podcast drops. You'll be able to see what the title is. Maybe it's something you're not that interested in, but maybe it's something you really are fascinated with and want to learn more about. And so you'll get little reminders of when it drops and what the topics are.
Yes, you will. Listen, thank you for being here again from the kitchen table. We love doing the podcast. Love sharing what's on our mind. And until next time, we hope you have a great day. And as you celebrate this Holy Week, you dig into your family and your faith. And it can be a time of renewal as you kickstart, if you haven't, how you engage your family on what's really important in life, which is the faith, the reasons why we're here, the reasons why we live our life, the reasons why we make the choices that we make, come down to this week. So, with that, thanks for being here. Till next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.